Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hi, I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
And you're listening to Maltin on Movies. And I was just saying to our guest today, Robert Patrick, that I heard that at the BBC, that this may be apocryphal, I don't know, at the BBC, because we were getting ready to start the show for you guys, that they don't say action or start or any of those things that you might hear, but they go, the director will say into the mic, 3, 2, 1, proceed. I'd like to think that's true. I'd like to hope that's true.
I want to hope that it's the Queen every time.
I love it.
Just doing that.
I love it.
For everything.
There's such an elegance to it.
Right?
Yes, yes. And a calm.
Yes.
Kind of speaks to not just a reserve, but a calm.
Yes.
That we don't associate with show business.
No. We need more calm.
We need more calm. And you just said, and I swear.
Speaking of calm.
You said the exact thing I had in my mind, because I've heard this before about working with Clint Eastwood, which you have several times.
I have had the great privilege of working with him twice, and he directed me in Flags of Our Fathers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll describe this to you, Leonard.
Mm-hmm.
I'm flown to Iceland, and with Mount Suribachi, the mountain that's the Japanese mountain on Iwo Jima, the mountain that's serving in Iceland as Suribachi. We're there, we're on the beach, and there's a tent, and there's this invasion happening. And very calm, you know, I'm brought up there. All right, Robert. You'll be in the tent. You'll start the scene. You'll come out. We'll hinge with you. And then as you yell to the heavens, we'll pan off you to Mount Suribachi behind you. Whenever you're ready. How cool is that? It's calming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everybody's quiet.
No just action, no all, cut.
No
right?
action, this cut. Whenever you're ready. How cool is that? And then I got to work with him in Trouble with the Curve.
The film, yeah. I like a lot.
And to work with him as an actor in a scene,
mm-hmm.
one-on-one, and... Rob Lorenz, his producer, mm-hmm. producing partner, was the director, and he was the same way. Whenever you guys were ready, they were like, you have this area to work right here, this you can pace right here, and then, of course, you go up and you'll address Clint. That was just phenomenal. There's just real elegance to it. I love that. He must have picked that up from the BBC.
Yeah, right? what is Clint like to work opposite?
Well, as an actor, he's fantastic.
Yeah.
I think as an actor, the daunting thing is to work with guys you've idolized or they've had a huge impact on your career and you've got to hold your mud. And you know what I mean about that. You've got to hold, and in walks
the publicist.
My publicist. And here she is, Natasha. Join us, Natasha. But it's where you've really got to hold your mud. You've been hired. You've been hired to do a job. You may just be inside so excited, but you've got to be cool and you've got to focus and do your thing. And,
oh, I would think the last thing you want to be is uncool in front of Clint Eastwood.
In front of the man who invented cool. No,
you've got to match his cool. And it's really easy. Because he's such a giving actor, as much as well as he is a director.
Mm-hmm.
When you're working for him, there's, you know, he hired you, so he's confident you're going to do what you're going to, what he expects you to do, and you're prepared, and you know that you're not going to rehearse.
Mm.
You go right into the scene, the first take. There's a little discussion of the blocking, but there's no rehearsal.
And how often is there a second take?
I got 3 takes on that first scene I mentioned in Iceland.
That might be a record.
And the other actors, Barry Pepper and the other actors involved, said, we don't get 3 takes.
No.
So And I don't know if it was a good thing or it was a bad thing. I never asked. Well, I just kept going.
Well, there was a camera move involved.
There was a camera move.
Perhaps it might
not have been performance. It might have been, because I think I did
that.
It the
we're
same
gonna
way.
We're going to assume it's not performance.
I am too.
We're just going to take that as a given.
You know, he hired me from Trouble with the Curve was after Flags of Our Fathers, mm-hmm. so I'm going to assume it was.
Promising there was a second.
It was a job well done.
That sounds good. The last time we saw each other was in the lovely city of Austin, Texas. Where I was moderating a panel with Robert Rodriguez to promote the debut of his TV series version of From Dusk Till Dawn. And I enjoy doing that kind of thing. This was at South by Southwest, the festival. And there was only one problem, which was there were
462 actors on the stage.
Yeah, there were a whole bunch of people all in tall director's chairs. And they had only given me six names, and there were like twice that many people on the panel.
But being the kind of guy that you are, he did it perfectly. He goes, Robert, why don't you introduce everybody?
Yes, indeed.
Nailed it.
But I got away with that. But then as we went down the line, I couldn't remember who was who, you know.
Yeah.
And so I clung to you. I invited you. I waved you over to sit next to me because we've met before.
Oh, yes.
And I just felt, okay, you're going to be my rock, my security blanket.
That's
so
who
speak,
you are.
For the duration rock. Of this. And it all turned out fine.
It was wonderful. You did a wonderful job with it. It was so great to see you. You know, those events are a little intimidating, to say the speak, to get it in front of a live audience. You've just seen your show for the first time.
Really good show, though.
And I was really happy with it. I was very proud of it.
Yeah, it looked real good.
And LRA Network is growing. I think that that show was developed and put on the air to kind of help kick that network off. And I think it's doing really well.
Yep.
It was a wonderful chance to work with Robert Rodriguez again. But it was so great to see you there. Because let me say this, that I think whenever you pop up, you add gravitas to whatever it is that we're talking about. And you walk in, you're Leonard Maltin, you're just, you know, there's a certain gravitas that you give to the to the ceremony itself.
He's going to be impossible at home.
You remember Paladin had a calling card, have gun, will travel. Mine says gravitas to go.
Gravitas just, you to know, go. It's takeout.
It's just what I do.
It's you what know, you
it's,
do.
It's not a big deal.
But
not
you,
a big deal.
You lend but, it such a real nice, you know.
Maltin.
To the happenings.
You maltined well.
I will take your flattering comments with good grace, and thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Now,
credibility.
Now,
he gave us credibility.
Now, Mr. Rodriguez first employed you, if I'm not mistaken, on the faculty. Is that the first time you worked with him, I think?
And I'm, you know what? That's a great story. I was invited over to Mindy Marin's to meet Robert Rodriguez for that casting session. And out front, I ran into John Stewart, whom I really didn't know. But we hung out together. That was back when he was smoking cigarettes. And, of course, this is before Comedy Central. I think I was smoking, too, at the time. We sat out there in front of that audition, kind of looking at our sides and, you know, contemplating our future. And he made some comment to me about this acting thing, and it was kind of interesting. Of course, years later, he goes on to be John Stewart.
Yeah.
But meeting Robert was wonderful. It was the first time I met him. And I think I had done at least two movies for Miramax, and that was a Miramax movie. So I think I was in that pool of actors that, you know, they bring in for different things.
But it's got to be a big compliment when any director rehires you.
Yes, in some
cases repeatedly rehires you.
Yes. Robert Rodriguez have a great working relationship. I loved doing the faculty. It was a really, really great script. And I know you gave it a good review.
Well, and the cast. It's a really good cast.
The cast was phenomenal. We had Piper Laurie. We had
B.B. Newworth.
We had Famke Jensen. We had
Elijah Wood.
Josh Hartnett.
Clea DuVall. All kinds of people.
Selma Hayek.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Sean Hattissey, a lot of really good people.
Some really, really good. And I think it was one, Sean Hattissey's first film.
Yeah.
Josh Hartnett's first film, maybe. One of his.
It's early.
Those glasses are great on you, Natasha. For those of you at home, you should see her glasses.
It's an audio medium. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
You're just going to have to trust.
But I love that. There's usually so much makeup involved with me getting into one of these these things.
Well, which causes us, which impels us to spin the wheel of time back just a little bit, because when we told friends that you were going to be a guest on our podcast, you know, surely, the first thing almost everybody says is T2.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking—
Another movie you gave a good review to.
Yes. I like, you know, but what sticks with people, what sticks with people, of course, is the impression you made.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you did a video game spinoff, mm-hmm. and a short subject, and, you know, so you've revisited that liquidy character a couple of times.
That
well, recently,
character.
Well, that is the, you know, that movie is the cornerstone of my entire career.
Mm.
I mean, and I think about it a lot whenever I'm in these situations and we're talking. It's my calling card.
Mm.
We've been revisiting it a lot lately because it just got re-released in 3D.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was just reunited with, I think you'll find this interesting, Steve Spaz Williams, who was the, I'm sure you know this, the animator who did the Liquid Pod in The Abyss, which was the foundation, and then they took that animation and enhanced it and improved it and made it the Liquid Metal Terminator.
Yeah.
But he was the guy that did all the animation up at ILM.
Man.
Wow.
Under Dennis Muren. Mm-hmm. Supervised it all, but mm-hmm. it was actually Spaz. And we just recently got together. They're doing a documentary about him. He went on to do the T-Rex for Jurassic Park with the same technology.
Huh.
So this was last week. We were filming a documentary for that. And these were things I didn't know. I was the first actor digitized. And it was before motion cap.
Huh.
So the way Steve put it, he said, you were sort of involved with the development and the creation of motion cap. You're the first actor to be done that way. So we revisited it. It's such a long process, I won't get into it. But the movie, you know, I started with Roger Corman,
mm-hmm.
B-movies, as they were called. And thank God for Roger Corman.
Oh,
because
yes.
If he wasn't around, I don't know how I would have got my foot in the door. And through that, those early movies I did, I eventually got an agent finally after doing those movies, and I did Die Hard 2. And then my agent, once Billy Idol was involved in a motorcycle accident, it created an opportunity that Jim Cameron was looking then for an unknown. He had Billy Idol set to do the T-1000.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
And Billy had a motorcycle accident, so Jim started a search for an unknown, which think about how smart this is, because you didn't know me. You didn't know me when
Not
you
at
saw
that moment,
movie.
No.
But when you saw me in that character, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
You had no preconceived notion of who
of course
I was.
Not. No baggage.
And mm-hmm. that's the thing. That's where, to me, it's tricky is, on the one hand, you want to establish yourself. It's important to establish yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's how you get career and everything else. But there's something about the first time people see you.
It is.
They don't know you.
They don't know you.
You could be anything. You
and
could be anyone.
And they will accept you in that
yes.
character. And it really enhanced that movie. The fact that, people saw it and were just, they had no idea who I was.
Yeah.
Where'd that guy come from? And, the movie was just such a breakthrough in special effects and visual effects. And we mentioned Steve and ILM and, of course, the late, great Stan Winston.
Yes.
And it was, all those, and Jim Cameron, it was four parts, it was Jim, Stan, ILM, myself, and what we were doing. But Steve Spaz Williams just reminded me. He said, you know, the whole time you were training and preparing for that, and you were studying, and you were what you were doing to yourself to program yourself is exactly what I put into the animation.
Mm. Mm.
In other words, we would discuss wushu and martial arts and how I was going to take hits and all that. And they used that for the animation. So we were really, you know, in a creative environment where we're all feeding off of each other. And it was my job to sort of, you know, bring it all in and make it work from the different, from the Stan Winston to the ILM and so forth, under the direction of course, the great James Cameron.
Yeah. I miss Stan Winston. What a...
What a sweetheart.
What, and, you know, so, it, and so funny.
Can I cuss on here?
Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't sure. I don't want to offend anybody, but the when I got cast, okay, they sent me to, and you know, I could barely pay the bills. Living in a dive in Hollywood with my fiance, and all of a sudden I get swooped up into the T2 thing, and you go to Van Nuys Airport and you're gonna get on a plane, and you know I'm expecting to get on a commercial flight,
right?
But no, I'm whisked off to a private jet, and I meet this guy Stan Winston, who's won all these Academy Awards, and you know just, and the first thing he says to me is, Robert motherfucking Patrick. That was how he greeted me. And you know what he was saying?
Well,
he was
what
like,
do you need?
Well, what he was saying was, who the hell are you? What yahoo? Where did they find this hillbilly? And how is this all going to work? But he was great. I miss him dearly. His sense of humor during the whole process was something I relied on.
Wow. What an experience! I mean, for that to be—it
really was.
I can't even imagine.
Truly blessed to come out here and, you know, you want to get in the business and, you know, I didn't know anyone when I came out here and I wasn't a trained actor. I knew I just wanted to do it and to luck into working with Roger Corman and being able to do stunts, and then those guys recommended me on, and then you know during the audition process with James Cameron, I find out that he's a Roger Corman graduate.
Mm. Yes, of course.
The Roger Corman Film School.
Yep.
And that was another thing in my favor when they were going ahead to cast with it. But you know, you sort of sit back, and I don't take any of it for granted, Leonard. I'm incredibly grateful.
That's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
That's pretty obvious.
I'm pretty grateful. So I'm very, very proud of Terminator 2.
Yeah.
And,
I mean, see, now some people might. Well, perhaps if you hadn't worked since then, you wouldn't be so sanguine about
that's
it.
That's true.
But
some people say, don't call me Vanilla Ice. And those people are foolish because... Jesse, and you know what? He's brought it back around. He's brought... Now he lets you call... He'll let you make jokes about Vanilla Ice.
Will he?
And he's working again.
Come on, man. Because, it was great.
But this is the thing.
Ice baby.
I mean, it gets no better. I hope he does a cover of that. You're in control of these things. Make sure he does a cover of that song. No, it's...
Ice.
I'm into it. But that's... He eventually, and this is only in the last few years, came back around. He does a TV show. For anyone who doesn't know, we're talking about Vanilla Ice, who was a rapper, the whitest of white rappers, and his hit song, Ice Ice Baby, which Robert so kindly performed just a bit of.
Just a bit. And he was before, think about it,
before Eminem. Yep, he was. And he did.
And now
the
he's
thing.
Renovating homes.
That's the thing. He did the thing that people do, where they go, "I don't even talk to me about this. This is what I became famous for. I don't want to hear it. I hate the song. I hate the name." And then it occurred to him that he probably would want to work again in the industry at some point. And he said, "You know what? Call me Vanilla Ice. That's totally fine.
That'll work."
And then he's in movies again. He's on TV shows. So I have great respect for people who appreciate what made them famous.
Mm-hmm. And in my case. You know, and I am so grateful for this now. Yeah. There was a time period where it was like I couldn't get hired, after that movie came out.
Yes, it's always tough.
And it took a while for me to catch on to the fact that I needed to really alter the vision of me, physicality of myself as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until I grew my hair, gained some weight, grew a beard that I... sort of snuck in on Fire in the Sky, and Rob Lieberman had no idea I was the T2. And he went, wait a minute, the guy I just hired was the T-1000? I had no idea.
You have to make it easier. for casting people to, that's why, you know, that's why people go in a costume as a character. It's why they film themselves dressed up and in hopes that, okay, if I put on a red wig so you don't see my blonde hair,
mm-hmm.
or if I shave my head or whatever it is, that you'll be able to picture me as this character.
So true.
So yeah. To make you go from being this extreme clean cut wild thing in Terminator to sort of looking like the badass biker dude that you are, you know, it changes things. It does. It has a big effect.
And that was for a while there. It took me a while to kind of catch on to that, what was going on. And
well, you were still a newbie at it.
I was still a newbie, and people were like, well, what else can he do? You know, you got to come in and do this. And I was a little unsure of myself. I was spot on for what I needed to do for T2, but I was a little unsure of myself in some of the other areas. And But we continued.
Yeah.
Luck, of course, luck and timing always play roles in these
huge
things.
Huge.
So you got a good part in a movie called Copland.
Yes.
Which happened to be directed, it was directed and written by James Mangold.
A powerhouse.
Who, of course, became then one of your fans and admirers and rehired you again on that subject of rehiring. Because when people say to me, Robert Patrick, I have to tell you the first thing I think about, well, of course I think of T-1000, but is playing Johnny Cash's father in Walk the Line. I think that's one of the most extraordinary performances of your career.
Thank you. I am so thrilled about that and Walk the Line. And that happened because of Copland, because I worked with James Mangold, and also because I worked on Ladder 49.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember James calling me up after working with Joaquin Phoenix on Ladder 49, and he said, you know, I'm thinking about you for his father.
Mm.
And I want to meet you and talk to you about it. And so James and I got together and had some coffee, and we talked about it. And of course, I reminded him at that meeting that, you know, I'm originally from the South, even though in Copland I was talking like I was from Jersey. But I am a Southerner by birth, and Johnny Cash is a big part of my life.
Mm,
and,
of course.
You know, my early years. So it's much more in my wheelhouse, actually. And he was really interested in the relationship I had with Joaquin, which I adore him. You know, he's fantastic. And lucky for me, it's reciprocated. And he said, I'm pretty sure I want you to do this. And I said, well, I tell you what, out of respect to Joaquin, because I know how hard he's worked on playing Johnny. Because the whole time we were doing Ladder 49, he was playing guitar.
Mm.
And he was secretly, you know, kind of working on that while we were doing the movie. I felt it was important that I ask him, would it be a distraction?
Huh.
So once he kind of, I said, hey, Walk, what do you think about me being your dad? And he was like, I like it. I like that, RP. I like that. I think I'd like that a lot. And then, you know, I let Jim know, and we ended up doing it. So.
And when you play a character like that who is such a tough, unyielding old bird.
What a prick.
Yeah. You said it, not me. This is like an interviewer's question. Jesse and I tease each other about this sometimes when you ask what seems like a stock question, but I don't mean it that way. Do you judge your character? How do you approach this guy you have to bring to life convincingly for us?
I went to Johnny's own words about his father. I read an autobiography he had written about his dad, and there was something I found interesting in there. There was a lot of love and respect for his father, but there was a lot of, obviously, angst and, I don't want to put an emotion on it, but he didn't get along with his dad too well.
Yeah.
And I think that's what pushed him to be more successful. So the relationship with his father was incredibly important for his career, even though he knew deep down inside that his father really felt like his favorite son, the son that he expected the most of, had been killed. And it made Johnny feel like he had wished it would have been him, right?
Yeah.
And that's Johnny's point of view. I could take that on because I could kind of understand that in a weird way. Because of fathers and the complicated relationships sons have with their fathers, because they have so many expectations they put on their sons,
mm-hmm.
especially if he loses the number one and then now's the number two.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was easy to get into his mindset, but there was something in his autobiography that he said. He said, you know, I buried my father, and once he was there, I never went back.
Mm.
He never revisited it, never went and saw it.
Yeah.
And that said a lot to me. I did hear from the family, mm-hmm. of the Cash family, indirectly. They thought I had played him much more of a prick than they remember their grandfather being.
Tricky.
And I said, my response was, I can appreciate that. However, this movie was not from their point of view. It was from Johnny's point of view.
Right. Ah.
So... it may or may not, but that's at least Johnny's perception of his dad and his relationship with his father. And I'm sure it's different than the other siblings.
Sure, sure.
Right?
Well, absolutely,
of course, how could it not be?
Yeah, but that was the thing, I think, that drove Johnny. And my favorite scene in that whole movie with me and Walk was one we filmed on the second day, which was the Thanksgiving scene. And I remember doing all my coverage first and everybody at the table first. And James was really happy with that. And then we turned around and we put it on Joaquin.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everybody knew that we were friends that were at the table, Reese and all that. But Walk was... really demanding that I give it to him. So I was off camera really saying some very hurtful, mean, insulting things to him that disturbed some of the other actors, and they kind of all walked out and were like shaking their head going, my God, I thought they were friends.
Wow.
But it got dirty. I mean, it got really, you know, and the subject matter, I mean, you know, that's all about... you know, Johnny losing a brother and so forth. So it's very, Walk was in a very vulnerable position making that movie. And,
sure.
And you know, but I was in it with him. And I love that scene. And it's one of the most, this is one of the, my favorite scenes I've ever done. So thanks for recognizing that, Leonard.
Yeah, well, it was hard.
Gives you
recognize.
More credibility with me, man. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. Oh, you're too easy, Robert.
Well, yeah. maybe.
Now what are the odds? Or maybe it's not unusual. Maybe it was just copycatism. Somebody said, "Well, hell, let's have him play Elvis's father."
That was interesting. Well, you know, that came up afterwards, and I remember kind of thinking about it, but it was a nice payday. It was CBS, and I hadn't done too many of those kind of event series in my career. And I remember kind of thinking about that. Now, where am I going with this? You know, what's next for me? Stevie Ray Vaughan's dad? Am I going
to
play Bruce Springsteen's father in his autobiography, which I wouldn't mind doing?
I was going to say, if you have to.
So I've become the rock and roll dad, which is not bad. It's not bad.
There are worse fates.
There are worse fates.
There's certainly worse fates.
But Vernon was different. He was a loving father. He's a bit more of a dandy than Ray Cash, which he was more of a salt of the earth guy. Of course, they were the Cashes were sharecroppers, and but Vernon was a little bit more of a dandy. I don't think he liked hard work.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he was like Ray that way, and so he was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was fun. And Johnny Reese Myers was a terrific Elvis, and it was a great little miniseries. We had Randy Quaid as the we shot in Graceland.
Did you really?
Oh yeah, and just like Walk the Line, we shot in Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So we had gone. I had gone to Graceland, but to actually shoot there was
something
really
else.
Cool.
Yeah,
and I love Elvis. So I mean, who doesn't love Elvis? So
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was neat. It was a great experience.
You got a little bit of Elvis hair going on today if we just popped up the front slightly.
I'll tell you what.
Just a little.
It's a little bit too... I hear you, and I've been influenced by those guys growing up, and I'm not letting it go.
Why let it go?
The hairstyle is there.
There's no reason.
No, it's too cool. It's too cool.
Looking over your vast, and I mean vast, list of credits, there's so many things that stand out. One is that you got into at some point, and I don't know if it was just a spur-of-the-moment thing or something you sought out, doing voiceover work.
Oh, yes.
You've been in a lot of animated series, including Duck Dodgers.
Yes,
one of my favorites.
Yes, yes.
And you've done video game work.
Yes.
Which a lot of actors are doing these days.
I did The Dig for Spielberg and Lucas.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
That was way back right after Terminator 2. It was the first big computer game. I was the voice of Boston Lowe. Mm-hmm. It was great. Voiceover work is fantastic, and voiceover actors are
amazing. My goodness, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And of course, Mark Hamill is a guy that I would run into a lot on the voiceover circuit.
Yep.
And I would like to do more, but I got to tell you, excuse me, now the market is...
oversaturated.
So crowded with everybody wanting to do voiceovers.
Sure.
You know, it while all that was going on and post-Terminator 2, there are opportunities that are presented to you, and you're trying to guide your career in a certain way and pick and choose. And I had opportunities to do endorsements and stuff, and I didn't want to do that. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to be that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And you think back about this now. You know, I mean, I don't know why I made some of the decisions, but in my mind, you were a film actor. You know
sure.
what I'm saying?
Yes. Sure.
Yes, exactly.
And you don't want the business to absorb you at whatever level it wants. You want it to absorb you at the level you want, I feel.
Sure.
So I was resistant to appearing on camera endorsing a product, but then if you get to do a voiceover commercial,
you're
making six figures.
That's
for
it.
I'll come in once a week and say, I want to believe. Nice little X-Files poster over there.
Yeah.
I see that.
Well, you're in nerd land right now.
This
you're
is nerd
at Meltdown.
Land.
I mean, if anywhere. You know that Sizzler wanted to use him.
Why not?
Sizzler wanted him. You were gonna hear him. The pitch was they're going to be showing pictures of food, and great, fantastic.
No, they were going to promote the Sizzler menu as if it was a movie.
Oh, that's a fantastic idea.
You know, it's super. It's spectacular. The critics are raving. And when they were going
to
say that, it's just going
to
be a shot of me with my Sizzler platter in front of me. And this is many years ago, and I'll date this now by saying, when I got this phone call, I said to the people, because I love to mess with them when they would call, I'd say, so Gene and Roger turned you down?
Oh, I love it.
This awkward silence on the end of the other line.
And they'd either say yes or wait and go, no. No,
which does it?
And I
the
said,
higher
I said,
pitch it gets,
said,
the worse.
Yes.
No.
You know, I sure would have loved that paycheck, but I just couldn't do it.
Oh,
really?
My mom and I were pissed. We were like, "This is going to be so funny. Why won't you do?" In the same way that when Paul Newman came out with his lemonade, I said, "Popcorn, malt and popcorn. Everyone needs it.
Everyone needs it.
He wouldn't go
That's
for it.
That's all right. That's all right. Well, you know, you got an idea of where you're
it's
at.
It's the 21st century. Anything's possible.
Now,
you hear that,
now.
Sizzler?
Now you can do anything.
Yes, exactly.
Dare to dream.
Bring that out. Bring that out now,
right?
Sizzler.
Now,
it's time to revisit it.
But now you've done something unusual, though.
Uh-huh.
You have participated in at least four really popular TV series.
Yeah.
Been lucky.
And kind of managed to be the Mr. Teflon of high-end television, where you've done a season or a partial season and then left, or the show has expired, and you've been hired by another top-rated TV series.
Luck.
And you've done it over and over.
Talent doesn't hurt. I'll accept your answer of luck, but...
Well, this is an interesting thing to discuss with you guys, because let's go back. I mean, if you know, I got here in 1984. You had to fight your way in the business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But think about what was available. You know what I mean? There was like exploitative art house kind of, not even art house, but...
More like Grindhouse.
Yeah.
More like Grindhouse opportunities, like say with Roger Corman, right?
Yeah.
And then as that progressed, you know, from VHS to DVD, and then you're doing box artwork, you know, like Bob Mitchum used to call it. You're doing box artwork. Or, you know, and you're doing this movie that goes right to...
video.
Exactly.
Laserdisc.
And you're making a neat income from that, and you're trying to throw in a studio movie here and there and keep your career going, but you gotta pay the bills.
Yep.
So you find yourself doing that, and at some point, Leonard, I had an acting. I still have my acting coach. You know, we were just sort of contemplating my career and going like, God, you know, I got to do something, because I'm kidding myself to think that these movies that are going right to video are going to be anything other than what they are. Mm-hmm. And there's so much more I want to do. And lo and behold, I got a phone call from David Chase. I had met him for a movie that never happened. And it was, would you do The Sopranos? Hmm. Come guest star on The Sopranos. And my acting coach, Stephen Bridgewater, said, you got to do it. And now I had not done TV, right?
Yeah, see, but that was not, at that moment especially, that was not TV.
No.
Well, to quote their ad line, it's not TV, it's HBO.
Yeah.
But at that time, that was the show.
And I wasn't as hip to the fact of that as you are, mm-hmm. right? I was still sort of, and my coach was, dude, it's the greatest thing that's ever been on television. It's mm-hmm. the greatest writing. You've really got to look at this. And I had done a couple of little independent movies. I had one that was at the Venice Film Festival. As a matter of fact, I flew to the Venice Film Festival for that film and then flew right into Queens to do The Sopranos. But we worked really, really hard on it. And I had the opportunity to do another, like, direct-to-video movie for a lot of money or go work for scale for HBO.
It's hard.
And, you know, you got a family. You're juggling all this stuff. And so you're trying to figure it out. Do I do the Sizzler commercial or not? And thankfully, my acting coach has a big influence on me. I accepted the role in The Sopranos. And it was such a pivotal point in my career because everybody in Hollywood watched it. And by, you know, doing that performance, it legitimized me, I think, in some way as an actor. Mm-hmm. Got them to look at me in a different way because it was such a departure mm-hmm. for how I had been cast before. I was playing mm-hmm. a very anemic, pathetic gambler, mm-hmm. and I get, you know, bitch slapped around by Tony Soprano. So, you know, but it really, I benefited from that. And that's how The X-Files happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's because Chris Carter.
Chris Carter saw you on that?
That, and he had met me once before, and he was a fan of Fire in the Sky.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how that happened. That's how that opportunity happened, and it ended up being. And it also happened as a result of me being, like, you know, just aware of you can continue to do these direct-to-video movies and hopefully pop in a studio movie every once in a while, or you just go full bent into some really great writing because, you know, it was just so apparent when I was doing The Sopranos. It's such a well-written show. I need a well-written show like this where I'm a lead on a TV series. I'll take it. And The X-Files came, and that's just luck.
And James Gandolfini, tell us about working with him.
You know, such a sweetheart. I'll tell you a funny story about him, Leonard. And Jesse, I'm not excluding you.
It's okay.
I worked really, really hard with my acting coach before I went to Venice, and I flew into Silver Cup Studios, but my acting coach had said something to me. He said, you know, right before you shoot that scene where he comes into the sporting goods store and he grabs you to get his money and he bitch slaps you around and you're supposed to cry like a little girl. No disrespect. cry like a little boy.
You're in a safe place here.
Thank
you're fine.
Well,
you're fine.
I don't know what I can say anymore. Anyway, so after the read-through, so we get up to the Silver Cup. Have you ever been there, Silver Cup Studios?
Yeah.
It's a part of history. You get in there, you do the read-through with the whole cast. Now, I'm ready. Man, I mean, they're like looking at the script really fast, going like, am I dead? Right? They're all like,
you
never knew.
That
they never
so
knew.
Funny.
Who's going to get it, you know? And but I was on. I'd done these scenes. I had made choices, and I was on, right? So Jimmy and I walked down in front of Silver Cup, and we were having a cigarette, and we're standing out there, sitting out there, and I said, tomorrow we're going to shoot that scene. And I said, you better have your A game. And man, he looked at me, you know, like, what the fuck did you just say to me? And he stood up and he sort of flicked a cigarette in my general direction. He said, oh, don't worry, I'll have my A game. And walked off. So in that cut to the next day,
bam,
we're there. He walks in, and I mean, he was, you know, he, first thing, here's what he said to me. He said, he looked at me, he goes, how's your balls? I'd never heard that in my life. What the hell does that mean, right? How's your balls? They're fine. Good. I'm hungover. Let's do this. So we went into this scene, and man, he just came at me like the bull that he was. And it was one take. And grabbed me, storm me around like I'm a little, you know, rag doll. And I was terrified. Terrified. And it was great. And then after that, invited me to have lunch with he and his dad. So we had a great time. And he said some kind words about me, and I appreciated it. And I really enjoyed working with him. He's an immense talent. I'll give you a little ending to this. I got a call a couple months ago from his son, Michael, who said, can you take me to a Mark Mahoney's tattoo shop, Shamrock Social Club? I want to get a tribute tattoo to my dad.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, wow, that's so cool that I got the call to take him there to do that.
Cool.
It is. It was an emotional thing.
Yeah.
And I took him there and we got him a tattoo to tribute his dad. And he's an actor now, Michael.
Really?
Gandolfini, yeah.
How old was he?
19. 19.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah.
And that's a legendary spot, too.
Him. Yeah.
Shamrock.
That's where most of my income comes from, Mark Mahoney.
I notice
yours, too, my dear.
I'm a slightly inky person, yeah.
How did your father take that, by the
way?
Well,
see, what I tell everyone
is
he has
good,
a...
Good.
I tell everybody that he has a massive Casablanca back piece.
Oh, yeah.
That's how I always describe it.
I love that.
Massive Casablanca back piece. But they don't mind him.
Yeah, I think my kids are probably headed in that direction. But I waited till I was 40-something, and we were doing Ladder 49, and I went with Baltazar Getty and Joaquin and a few other people, and I ended up getting my wife's name and my daughter and my son tattooed. That was the first tattoo, their names.
Hmm. That's a good way to start.
Yeah, some good buddies. But Jimmy, fantastic. That whole crew was fantastic. It was a magical time to do that movie.
And then again, but
I mean a TV show.
Yeah.
But then again, you wind up on the right shows. You're on True Blood when that's the hottest commodity out there.
I think that's good agenting, good management. My manager, Leanne Cornell, my agent, the Gersh agency, Leslie Siebert, Daisy Wu, Carlos Gonzalez. They, Jesus, I sound like whatever. I'm mentioning those people. It's good agenting. I don't know how that all came about. I really don't. I do. Alan Ball, I read for something that he was creating and did not get invited to do that project, but he suggested I do this, True Blood. And
well,
I went off and did it.
You were on one episode, I think, of Big Love, right?
Big Love. Yes, I did. I think I did two. Maybe, no, I think I only did one.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a history with HBO in the sense that having done The Sopranos.
Right.
And I think I've done a couple of movies that they've produced.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm in their arsenal of actors. That's how that happened.
I can't remember everything you've done. I have no idea how you can.
I have a hard time.
I mean, you see, my dad's got in front of him.
Yes, I have my
comedically long list.
You know what I'm most proud of? Well, I'm proud of a lot of things, but what I take great pride in is the fact that if you look at where T2 is on my resume, and then you see the aftermath, I'm kind of proud of that.
You should be proud of that. That's not the biggest thing that you've ever done.
Well, there's a lot of other stuff. I took advantage of that opportunity, I feel.
I have to tell you, there's a film you're in.
Is it a stinker or a good one?
No.
It's not one of my favorites.
Okay,
give
fair
me
enough.
Your stack of papers.
It's not one of my favorites.
Okay.
But it was great fun seeing you in Identity Thief.
Oh, yes indeed.
Yes.
Because you don't get to do much comedy.
No.
And here you did.
I think the first what I consider comedy was Striptease. I don't remember how you reviewed that movie.
Mm-hmm. Not one of
I don't think you did
one of the 10 best of the year.
I didn't think you say. I didn't recall you really being that favorable about it. And to put anyway, yes, Identity Thief. Jason Bateman's a friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know Melissa McCarthy. How did I get that movie? I was in Atlanta doing Trouble with the Curve, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's Seth Gordon is the director, correct? Yes, right?
I think so.
Is that somebody? Oh my God, I hope so. Yes, it is Seth Gordon.
Okay.
Came and met me. And I walked out. I was in like a sleeveless shirt and I had my tattoos. You know, he looked at me and he went, "That's the guy. That's the guy I want. I want you to do it." And I was kind of like, "All right, cool, man." But great fun. Melissa McCarthy is.
She's something special.
So wonderful to work with, yeah. And Jason is such a gentleman, and I'm so proud of him and everything he's accomplished. And I was so thrilled to be a part of it, and it was fun. I wish they would have done a sequel to it. It would have been a lot of fun. But comedy is something I'm getting more and more comfortable doing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know how to describe that, other than I'm starting to really realize that there's a. Especially on my show Scorpion that I do now, there's a gravitas that maybe I lend to some characters that you can kind of trade off of with the comedy.
Yes,
and
sure.
And there's a way to do it, and I'm learning from one of my actors I work with, Eddie K. Thomas and Ari Stidham. I'm really learning.
I really like Eddie K. Thomas.
I love them both, and they've taught me so much. And
you did an episode of Community. I mean, you got
Community
be good.
Was good, right?
Yeah,
you got to be good. Dan Harmon isn't hiring any slouches for that show.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. No. I think that was after Identity Thief too. Had so much. Melissa, what's a funny anecdote from that? Melissa, I think the first day it was me pushing her derriere into my van, and you know, one of those, "I hope I'm not too heavy for you." It was one of those kind of comments. No, you're fine, you're fine, you're fine. Then we did that whole scene where she's in my beard.
Yes.
Oh my God, she just had her field day with me. She was all, it was so fantastic.
You got manhandled.
I was supposed to be out cold, and I think her whole thing during that period was to see if she could get me to break.
I love it.
And I was just like, I mean, it was just incredible. It was so funny. Such a joy to work with.
How old are your kids?
Well, my daughter is 20, Austin Jessica.
Oh, thank you.
Patrick,
thank
named you. After you, of that, course.
Obviously. Thank you. Thank you.
And my son, Samuel Robert James Patrick, or as I like to call him, Sammy Bob Jimmy Patrick.
I love that.
He's 17.
Why can't I have names like that?
You're not from the South.
That'll do it. That'll do it. That'll do it. Oh, I love it.
Yeah, Sammy's
accident of geography.
Right.
Accident of geography. You were born in Hollywood.
I'm a Cedar Sinai.
You're a Cedar
baby.
Sinai baby. Yeah. Both my kids were born in Hollywood, but you know, me being from the South, I couldn't resist whole Sammy Bob Jimmy.
If you can
thing.
Do it, you should do
you
it.
You got to do it, right?
You know, I don't think that my Jewish New Yorker parents would have landed on that. Though my mom does often threaten to rename me Bronx.
Ooh, I like that.
That's where she's from, and she often says, you know, if you want to be hip. Bronx.
I love it.
Rolls off the tongue with a thud.
You could pull it off.
I could pull it. Bronx. Bronx T-neck. That'll do it.
Never mind.
He's a good Jersey boy.
Never
He's
mind.
He's a good Jersey boy. But now, do they like theater? Do they like what you do?
They do.
Do they like set?
They do. Austin was used to visit the X-Files. And put the cans on. And
I love it.
Sammy was born during my first episode of The X-Files.
Wow.
And he was a very special birth. Excuse me. My daughter goes to a college in Vermont, a very liberal arts school in Vermont, and she's studying cinema and visual arts. And she's interning in the business.
Good for her.
Very smart girl, yeah. And very beautiful. And I, you know, she could do. I've told her there's so many avenues you could go into right now. She could be in front of the camera. She could be behind it. She could be involved with, you know, like I said, so many different ways she could go. So she's really trying to immerse herself into it, and she's focusing on literature and writing. So I think she's going to be interning in New York City this winter with a media group, and that'll be a great experience for her, living in Manhattan.
Good,
and,
yeah.
Doing that thing. I'm excited about that. And my son is a... I'm going to brag about my son.
Do it.
Stand back. Here
I just
go.
Saw my son, who is a very a methodical kind of thinker. Very smart, was an athlete, kind of given up his athletic career to pursue the arts. Now, he sings, and he's a standard singer, like Michael Bublé, mm-hmm. You know. He's been studying with Pisha McPhee, Cat McPhee's mother from my show Scorpion. He's been studying with her, loves it, right? Fancies himself as a Frank Sinatra kind of guy. And then he quit football at the high school he goes to in Sherman Oaks, and he auditioned for a play and got to play, and he ended up playing Billy the Stutterer in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Now, I've never seen him act, right? I've seen him in musicals, right?
Yeah.
He's done like 5 musicals. But I have to say, Leonard, I wish you would have... I had heard from other parents that your son is just amazing. And I'm like, this has a complicated role. You got to do the stutter. You got to, you know, there's a lot of things going on. I saw him closing night, and I was just blown away because it wasn't my son. It was a real defined character. He stuck with it. The commitment was there. So he probably won't go by the name Sammy Bob Jimmy Patrick.
Probably I don't know why not.
More's the pity.
So he'll probably go with Sam Patrick, but I kind of expect him to do something very serious in this business in front of the camera.
Good for him. That's great.
It was amazing.
And someday you'll get to work with him.
I couldn't wait. And I got to tell you what, looking at pictures of me when I was going through the whole Terminator 2 process, I'm looking at him and I'm going like, dude, you look exactly how I looked.
Yeah.
I mean, you really should keep your eyes on whatever they do with that franchise because you're the son of the
T-1000. Yeah.
I mean, for real.
You gotta walk. He'll walk in with you.
Well, he can walk in
say,
by himself.
Excuse me.
Excuse me. I'm the son of the T-1000. All right? I can do this.
I look just like my dad. I'll walk into a movie theater. Do you know who I think I am?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have any idea think I am? Won't go well.
Now, you have played more than your fair share of military characters.
More than my fair? You mean there's a limit?
No, there's no limit at all.
Okay.
No limit at all. But I think your bearing, you know, the way you carry yourself, you project authority.
Mm.
I'm saying this with gravitas now.
I appreciate it.
You project authority.
I love this. I want a recording of this.
I think I could be afraid of you pretty easily. That's what I think.
I want to hear that every morning when I wake up.
But I know that in real life, you have a real serious engagement with military families and the USO.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like you to talk about that a little bit for us.
I would. Well, you mentioned, I don't know if you of course, your listeners at home can't see this, but this is a fairly new tattoo. This is my grandfather, Lieutenant Samuel Robert Patrick, mm-hmm. Lieutenant Colonel of the United States Army. This
Samuel
is after World War One, and he had ran off and fought in the war, came back and went to the University of New Hampshire and played football there. And then when World War II broke out, I think he owned a steakhouse in Boston, and he reenlisted. So he's one of my earliest memories, and one of the biggest impacts on me and my childhood is the colonel. And I have very early distinct memories of being at Fort Bragg with him before he died of stomach cancer in 1963. I have images of him holding me and all these kind of, and I really think that somewhere in there is what that's all about. You know, I don't know if it's divine intervention or I don't want to, you know, I don't know, but there's something that way that has guided me into doing all these military projects, because I did not serve myself. Mm. I'm thankfully, even though I would have been honored to serve my country, but I was post-World War II,
yeah,
and distinctly remember the horrendous way that our troops were treated when they returned to this country. Mm. And whether you agree with that war or not, these poor boys and women, girls, that went off and served our country and then were disrespected by their own fellow citizenry upon their return.
You're talking about the Vietnam.
I'm talking about Vietnam.
Era, yes, which I remember all too well.
Yes, you do.
He's
and I'm
a
sure,
baby boomer.
And I'm sure you... I'm sure, and I'm sure you remember exactly what I'm talking about. And I graduated high school in 1977, and luckily, I think I had to register for the draft, but the war ended for me. Mm-hmm. And because I didn't serve, and because of the military roles that I've played, I did feel a real need to... support the troops in any way I could to honor my grandfather and to honor my other uncles that served in Vietnam. And so the USO presented itself right after I was doing the unit. Dennis Haysbert, as a matter of fact, is the actor that got me in touch with the USO. And I think I've done 9 trips. I have one. They just offered me another one in May. I got to figure out if I can do. It's the greatest... thing that I've been able to utilize my celebrity or notoriety, whatever you want to call it, whatever I have, for, to actually go and support the men and women of our armed forces in Iraq and Afghanistan. I had the joy of going with Tommy Lasorda to Afghanistan, Camp Dicey, and seeing the environment in which these guys work, guys and gals, which in which they work and what they do for our country. Mm. And show them support. And
yeah,
the USO is such a wonderful organization. I'm so proud to be linked with them. There are a lot of great actors and entertainers doing a lot. And you know this goes back 75 years, 76
yeah,
years.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
Bob Hope. You know the whole thing.
Yeah.
And you don't, you know, when you hear the troops say to you, I can't tell you how much your visit did to get me through. When you first hear that, you're kind of like, I just don't believe I had that big of an impact. But then when you're in a restaurant in North Carolina and a young man walks over to you and says, I saw you in Kabul and you and your guys and you guys, when you guys, you lifted us so much and you got us through that thing. And now I'm back here and it's pretty powerful.
Give me chills, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty damn powerful.
I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine.
And that's happened to me more than once, where I've run into somebody once they've been back. I've been able to do, I ride motorcycles a lot, and I ride to the wall, the Vietnam wall, with a Vietnam vet, a dear friend of mine, New York Mike. And I go and I demonstrate for the Vietnam vets, because they're still convinced that there are prisoners of war over there and men missing in action from that war. And through their demonstration, actually, Rolling Thunder, they have uncovered the fact that there's a lot of servicemen and women missing from prior wars that were not really, wasn't really discussed that much. You know, they went in specifically for Vietnam and then found out that, well, wait a minute, what about all these people from Korea and World War II? And World War One, I mean, you know, their families want to know what happened to these soldiers. So it's been a very, very powerful and moving experience. And I know I took this off on a tangent, and I apologize. But,
no, please don't apologize.
I love playing military men, and I hope I'm not aging myself out of it pretty soon here. But I'm gonna start dyeing my hair like Ronald Reagan and really, really trying to milk these parts for. But you know, there's When you get to do your art and you really feel like you can represent something and do a, you know, have a chance to really do something and honor a group of people, it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah. Well, I can't think of anything better. And to have the privilege of being able to do it from a position of success.
Right.
Yes, that you're employed.
Yes. I have a job right now. Matter of fact, we had a big episode last night, Leonard. Ah. I'm not going to press you here. I don't know if you watch Scorpion, but it's a show that I love doing for CBS. I think it's a very unique show. It's very well written. It's clever. It's a team of geniuses, and I play a federal agent, a man of authority, with a weapon and a badge. And I protect the kids from the government and other people and themselves. And it's a real patriarchal role, role of patriarch to them. And I have a lot of fun doing it. And there's a lot of comedy involved with it.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Well, he doesn't really watch TV, unfortunately.
I'm not pressing anybody.
I know you're not. No.
We had a big episode last night.
Big episode. And you didn't watch it.
Big episode last night. And
maybe I'll have to subscribe to CBS All Access after all.
Look at that.
And then I can watch this stuff anytime.
It's good stuff. It's a very unique show.
All the time.
All RP. There's enough out there. There's 144 different characters, I think, now. I've lost track. Somebody, you know. Mm-hmm. That's
wild.
That's 144 different people.
Yeah. Oh.
In one lean figure.
Now, did you see my last film?
Which was?
Last Rampage.
No, I did not.
How do I do this without sounding too braggadocious?
Just go for it.
I got the best reviews of my career.
Yeah.
And it's a very, is that fair to say? It's a very small movie, but I bring it up to you because I would be interested to see what you thought of it. It's incredibly dark, incredibly disturbing, and it's the worst human being I've ever portrayed in my life.
Well, you're selling it. I mean,
and some people have said, you know, like, why would you make this movie? But it's because I do such a lighter type character, a heroic type character, a salt of the earth type character that you're, as an artist, you're looking for. I want to find the other extreme.
Of course,
yeah.
It's fun,
you know,
to do that. Yeah.
To remind yourself that you can do this too. And
sure.
I did it with Dwight Little, and Heather Graham is my wife, and it's a true story about a prison escape in Arizona by a man with his three teenage boys helping him escape. It happened in 1978, so it's a period piece. But it's reminiscent of, in tone, like a Hell or High Water kind of a thing, if that movie, you like that. But,
well, you've now put it on my radar and our listeners' radar.
Last Rampage.
Last Rampage.
And my brother did the score.
Netflix, Amazon?
Netflix, February 1st.
Ta-da!
There we are.
Netflix,
okay.
February 1st. And until then, is it available anywhere else?
You can stream it on iTunes. You can stream it on, help me
you
out.
You can look for it and find it, folks.
On Demand and Last Rampage.
Last Rampage.
Heather Graham is fantastic. Chris Browning. Bruce Davison.
Oh, Bruce has been here at this
microphone.
We got
microphone. To have him here.
Has he?
Yeah.
Yes.
Did he have he has more stories than I do.
Yes.
He has a famous
quote. Overwhelming.
He has right? He has a famous quote that I think it's attributed to him. He says, about his career, he goes, I just go wherever they kick me. Which I think is so apropos for Bruce, you know.
Oh,
but
man.
He's the sheriff that comes after me.
Okay.
And God, I love Bruce. I've worked with him a couple times. He's fantastic.
He's terrific.
And John Hurt. Excuse me, not John Hurt, whom
John
I've worked
Hurd.
With, but John Hurd.
John Hurt.
I work with both of them, but John Hurd. It's one of his last performances.
Wow.
And I will tell you, Leonard, if you would have been there with me when we were filming this, you and I got wrapped, and they said, you know, the big scene with Bruce and John's coming on later tonight. And I said, oh, I'll be staying for that then. Hmm. And I stayed and had lunch with John, and then I watched him and Bruce do their scene. And man, it was just powerful. Just powerful.
A lot of talent there.
Two really, really phenomenal guys.
So sad.
Yeah.
Sad that we lost him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we're glad you're here, needless to say. And we're glad you made the time to come by and visit us.
I'm thrilled to
your
be
crazy
here.
Crazy schedule.
And let's we got in touch on Twitter.
We did.
Social media.
It's true. The magic.
And I love
media.
That. I mean, Twitter's like it's fantastic.
I tell my dad, I say, tweet, and tell him how much you love him and see what happens.
It works.
And so, here you are.
Yeah.
It works. It's so great to see you again.
Same here.
And
same
it's lovely here. To spend time with your daughter.
Thank you.
And I think you guys do a wonderful podcast together.
We have a good time.
Yeah.
And people seem to listen.
Yeah, I don't know.
God bless them, each
the
and every one of them.
The only person who doesn't listen ever is my mother. She said, why? Why would I listen to the two of you? This makes no sense.
But Jesse, if you change your name to Bronx,
it could all change.
You know she would.
It could all.
Anything's
you know what?
Possible.
That's secretly it.
It's
that's
the 21st
the whole
century.
Time.
Anything's possible.
Oh man,
Robert, thanks. So, are you? Do you engage with social
does.
Media?
He does.
I do.
Does.
I am a Twitter guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
My Instagram is actually has more followers than my Twitter, which is kind of funny.
You're so hip.
And
you're so hip.
And your handle.
On the Instagram.
On the Instagrams.
On the Instagram, kids, it's at RipFighter, RipFighter. Thank you.
We got it. We're there.
RipFighter.
As you can tell, I can barely spell.
Okay.
And then Twitter is at RobertPatrickT2. My wife picked that out for me. Apparently, there's a lot of Robert Patricks out there. I was unaware.
Not to us.
Such a common name.
Not to us.
Only one we're interested in
only
right
one.
Now. Although, if another one is listening right now, no offense.
Yeah, right. Sorry, other Robert Patricks.
That's right.
Yeah, no disrespect,
no
Robert
disrespect
Patrick.
Intended.
The playwright.
Oh, gosh.
Awkward.
The Kennedy Children. Remember that play, The Kennedy Children?
No. You?
IMDb Robert Patrick, the playwright.
Okay.
You want to hear a funny story?
We're learning so much. Go ahead.
I'm going to try to be brief.
Give
I know
it.
I'm a long, very winded guy.
Please.
First restaurant I went to work in Hollywood was called La Strega at 4th and Western. First job I got. Okay, this is where I got my first play was while I was working in this. And there was a thing in there. There was a big poster. And it said, Robert Patrick's Kennedy's Children was in this restaurant. I'm looking at that going, son of a bitch.
Yeah.
There's already a Robert Patrick? I'm not even in the union yet. I'm not even going to get to use my name. Lo and behold, I found out that he wasn't in SAG. He was a playwright.
Yeah.
And I have heard from him over the years that, you know, like,
oh,
terrific. Terrific. I'm not the T-1000 guy. That's the other guy.
Yeah, that's his problem.
Yeah.
That's his headache.
Goodbye. Anyway. Goodbye, listeners. It's been a pleasure and an honor.
Thank you again. And Jesse, where can they find us?
You are at Leonard Maltin. I am at Jesse Maltin on Twitter and Instagram. And don't forget to go to www.leonardmaltin.com for movie reviews and write-ups of books and all that good stuff.
DVDs, Blu-rays, the works.
The works.
So thank you all for listening. And we'll be back next week. See you then.
Bye-bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.